Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those marking your first adventure into the realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain, where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis, and today's no different. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com, or go ahead and follow me at jvhilliardbooks on X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, or you can find me on Facebook and Discord just as JV Hilliard. And before we get started tonight, I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine, www.alteredrealitymag.com. And if you are a fan of speculative fiction or speculative poetry, which I'm guessing you are if you're listening to us tonight, you can find things like sci-fi and fantasy and dystopian and horror and monster stuff. It's all in those kind of genres, and you'll get people that are novice authors that are there for the first time getting published, all the way up to award-winning authors. This community of thousands. We get about almost 200,000 views a year now. And I would encourage you to take a look at alteredrealitymag.com when you have a moment or two and check it out. But tonight we're going to be chronicling the adventures of Laura Slovesko. So Laura, welcome to the realm. And do you mind telling everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to be at the realm. My name's Laura Slovesko, and I am very much a creative, but also very much a hermit, I suppose. I do a lot of my creativity just kind of at my house in my own little environment. I don't have anything that is up for, you know, purchase or anything, but I am currently querying my two novel series. It's called The Insuppressible Electra Ray. I spent about 10 years writing those stories, and they were also the first time I ever actually delved into fiction writing at all, but I am a lifelong lover of fiction. So in one way, when I started writing, it really surprised me because it was never something that was on my radar. And yet at the same time, it also felt inevitable because I've been just a fangirl. It's written in my DNA, you know, for as long as I can remember. So I started kind of writing my own characters, my own stories, and it just felt like this was where I was always meant to go. And I've never been one of those writers that has a million and one ideas. I fixated on the same two novel series for about 10 years and only started a new one when I was probably 1 week away from putting the final touches on it.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit, because you and I met at a library event here in Pittsburgh. We're fellow Pittsburghers, and we had a chance to meet there. But you said earlier, and I read a little bit about this too, that you've never had a thought in your head about writing until you're in your 30s. Why was that? It sounds to me like you kind of knew where this was going. And we all take, you know, I think it was the Beatles who famously once said that you could take as long as you want to get your first album out, but then after that, you're on a schedule. Like, people will expect things. Is that why it's kind of taken you the 10 years to put together your duology, or, you know, why the long path to getting into the publishing game?
Oh, I wish I had a great answer for that. I don't know. So the things I want to say are two-pronged as to why it took me so long to get started in writing. I have no earthly idea. However, I do have very distinct memories of like taking a creative writing class in high school and just feeling so utterly lost. When we were given projects that were to the tune of, you know, journal about real experiences, or, you know, write down the feelings that are evocative of, you know, a place in time that you experienced in your life, I could do that. And I liked doing that. But the few times we were tasked specifically to write something fictional, it was just like reaching into this empty void for me. I felt nothing. I had no ideas. It almost felt like just some kind of a spiritual block. It was a part of myself I couldn't access. What I can say is that I am a huge cosplayer, and I'm not a big gamer or LARPer, but I did LARP the main character in this book at a party with my friends one time, and kind of had a skeleton provided for me, but I put together a costume and I just kind of started thinking about her. This is the titular character, Electra Ray, and ended up just sort of role-playing in this very silly, fun context. And it was when my friend proposed the idea of writing a sequel to this adventure himself. He asked us to kind of start thinking a little bit deeper about our characters and sort of from the framework of like to conceptualize what he would do if he were to write a new game about these same people. And that never transpired, but I started having these ideas and they started becoming so big that I realized no matter what my friend had in mind, it wasn't all going to fit into this thing that was meant for like 25 players. And that was the first time I started writing it down. Now, as to why it took 10 years to finish, I had a grotesquely bloated concept of how much a story actually had to be. And so I was calling it a book. I said, I want to write a book. I want to tell this character Electra's story. And I just had never tried anything like it before. And by the time I had finished conceptualizing in my own head, kind of plotting it, outlining it, I had an absolute beast on my hands. And the entire project in its entirety, like it is clocking in around like 240K, which is wow.
That is epic, right? You know, mine range around 150 and they're considered epic. Yours is almost double that. And that is a monster project. But tell us a little bit about the character, because it sounds to me, first of all, the insuppressible Electra Ray is just a cool name that no one will ever forget, right? So you already have done the marketing on that already. I think that's pretty cool. But, you know, tell us a little bit about the duology, what you want to do with it. And, you know, it sounds to me like you're already having fun in your cosplay world. And for those of you who are listening, I know where this is a nerddom and a geekdom and people know what LARPing is, but for those of you who might not know what LARPing is, it's live action role-playing. And a lot of cosplayers get involved in that. I've done a little bit of that because I'm a big D&D nerd and did that when I was younger. I don't do that anymore, but I appreciate the art form that it's become. I see it a ton at the conventions, the cons I go to, you know, to do book sellings and book signings and speaking engagements and things like that. It's its own art form. It truly is. But tell us, before we get into cosplay, because I could talk about that all night too. Tell us about the insuppressible Electra Ray. I want to know a lot more about the character.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's tough to talk about her because the entire sort of arc of the first book is slowly peeling back the layers on her to find out the truth about her. I'll tell you how she presents. This is my take on, you know, you have that very classic thing they always say where every villain is the hero of their own story, right? I set out to tell the story of a hero who is dead convinced that she is the villain of her own story. So we meet her in this sort of kind of nonlinear time format where the main storyline of book one actually goes backwards. There's a separate thread that goes forwards that took place a long time ago before the primary storyline began. And we meet her in this moment where she has escaped from a magician prison. This is a story about people who roughly 3-5% of our modern world has the genetic capacity for magic. She is one of the people who does. She is an extremely famous or infamous magician who has been caught, sent to prison for a crime that is known all over the world because she used a type of magic that is not supposed to exist. It's a very scary type of magic that only one other magician has ever been known to use. It's a type of magic where you can actually pull somebody else's magic out of their body and take it into yours. That's not a thing that anyone's ever been able to do, except for her and this very scary magician long dead. So when we meet her, she has just actually escaped from prison. And she's on her way to get her hands on this object of incredible power. Incredible, but very vague to the reader, power. And it's set against two other points of view. The story is told from her point of view and two other characters who are vastly different than her, vastly different personalities, desires, pretty much everything. And that is actually a little bit, it's an insight into my process, because my primary character, I'm learning, my protagonist comes first. And then my secondary characters come out of who are the people who would naturally be around this person for me to create the dramatic scenarios that I want to tell.
Yeah, right.
And what I really just kind of want to say about the first book is that she's got an arc, and it starts off as a villain. And there is a counterpart character who is introduced very much as a sort of damsel who finds herself in a very complicated and unfortunate situation. And as their dual tales begin to unravel and we actually go backwards in time, we find out maybe Elektra is more than we thought she was and is more than maybe she thought she was. And the other character, a woman named Eve, maybe had a little bit more control over her supposedly terrible situation than we were led to believe. And we get to know them over the first book, and how we get to fully, I guess, realize by the end of the book how vastly different the reality of their characters is versus what we were presented with in the beginning.
Well, that's an interesting concept. And you're squeezing these all into a duology. I just got done with a quadrilogy, which is four books.
Oh, congratulations. That's fantastic.
And I'll tell you what, like the size and scope of what you're writing, it sounds to me like there's going to be more of these things. But I have to ask this question because I noticed it in our research on you. Your site says you're working on a new writing project so different it'll make your head spin.
Yes.
So I have to ask, right? Like that's you're talking about a softball. Like, how do I not ask the question? Can you give us a little peek behind the curtain and tell us what you're working on?
Absolutely. I would be delighted to. And when you asked me what my first project was about, you noticed I went off on that that massive sort of tangent, because I don't have that gorgeous crystallized elevator pitch for it. I still don't have that because I lived with it for so long and it is so long. My second project, gay mob romance. That's what I got. And there is more to it. Obviously, there's more to it. But I can see myself kind of growing as a writer because that is the crystallized explanation of what the second project is. And to just
that's a good blurb. It definitely catches your eye, or your ear in this case.
Yeah, it's a gay mob romance. And as of right now, I'm actually writing it as scripts. In my mind, it is a TV show. So that is hugely why it is so different from the first project. And script writing is a completely different beast than prose writing.
Exactly.
It's got its pros and cons, and I'm having a blast just exploring with it. I mean, it opens up a lot of possibilities that prose doesn't, but it's limited in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah, I have friends that are adapting their novels into screenplays and other things like that, and it's tough. Like I'm dealing with that a little bit on my own with the adaptation of my series into a graphic novel, and you're used to having three paragraphs to describe something, where in a graphic novel you've got a picture. and it has to evoke the same emotion that's part of that. So I get that. And so, have you found, it sounds to me like you're not finding it challenging as much as you're finding it fun. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's even more fun because it's spending a decade writing a book series, you become very honed in on what your own restrictions are. but there's only so far you could go when you have that series plotted and so well conceptualized and so cemented in your mind. When I started writing this second project, my mob romance, I was just like, dude, I have been riding myself for years and years and years on this massive project that I'm like so dead set on presenting to the world and having it be like, this is my magnum opus. And I'm just letting myself have fun with the second project. I mean, I think it is very, it's much more of a popcorn read. And it's very much just me leaning into like exactly what I want to see, kind of without restraint, without watering it down, without feeling too much like, oh, there has to be so much plot in order for me to get to the points where like, I'm just writing the stuff. It interests me. And it is thrilling and it's freeing and it is so much fun.
Well, let me ask you this, because a lot of folks, I've had cosplayers on before, but it's never been a focus of the conversation. And I want to talk a little bit about your cosplaying too, because I think that also may inform the kind of stuff that you're writing as part of that as well. And as a cosplayer, who have you cosplayed as, and which character has been your favorite? And I'm going to add this to the end of it. Which is your dream character that you'd love to cosplay, you just haven't done yet?
Oh, I love that. Well, and it is worth noting too. So I mentioned, you know, the initial spark of Electra came from a cosplay. I actually have been, I don't do drag, quote unquote, as in performing on stage, but I hang out at a lot of gay bars. I have a ton of gay friends. I just started doing like casual drag, dressed up as this very, very fancy, somewhat villainous dude. And he actually turned into the main character of my gay mob romance story / TV show. So there is some sort of connection.
So there's connectivity. That's exactly right.
Yeah, where like something about dressing up as a character and embodying them like unlocked a door in my mind that was previously shut to me. So that in and of itself, I think is just really cool. But traditionally, like my cosplay has been characters that I'm into. I've done Loki and Jessica Jones from the Marvel Universe. I have done, who else? I mean, so many over the years. I've done a couple Doctor Who themed cosplays. I did like a Lord of the Rings elf one time, just a generic one, nobody specific. My favorite cosplay that I've ever done, is the character Steed Bonnet from Our Flag Means Death. If you are familiar with the show.
I'm familiar with the show. I'm not familiar with it well enough to know who Steed Bonnet is. I'm familiar that it exists.
Okay. Yes. He's the main character. He's brilliantly portrayed by Rhys Darby. And, a friend of mine and I, we're both girls and we jointly cosplay the two main characters, Steed Bonnet and Blackbeard. And it is, I think maybe I've done the Steed Bonnet thing once solo, but the funnest thing is for the two of us to go out together as these two main characters, because this show has a small but brilliant, passionate, rabid fan base. So our experience of like going out as these characters, you know, we go to cons and we definitely made a splash at the Pirate Weekend at Pittsburgh Renaissance Fair. But the best thing about going out with these characters is that you see a lot of people looking at you and they're trying to identify what you're doing and they don't quite get it. But every now and then somebody just screams. And that's when, like, you know, you found an R Flag fan. And we have just had the most fun, wholesome, wonderful interactions with other people just by virtue of the fact that, like, we're wearing those silly costumes. And that is the heart of cosplay to me, when you and somebody else just make this instantaneous connection with each other. And it's just because, you know, at sight, you're into the exact same thing.
Yeah, I see that so much at the cons that I go to, GalaxyCon, DragonCon, Comic-Cons, you name it. And you see someone come by And they get excited when you know who they are. And then when you, even if there's something, a subtlety to it that only a real fan is going to see, and they put time into it. And some people, and it sounds to me like you're like this too, perfection in the costumes. They spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to perfect these things to the point where there is something that you're going to recognize off of it only if you're that deep into the property like they are. And I think that that's super cool. But hey, well, look, we're coming to the end of our show. And I mentioned to you off air, and I'm going to say it again. We are now at the point of the show where we typically do a quick little lightning round. We have fun, some questions that are designed to get fun, quick answers back. And are you ready to play our lightning round?
I'm so ready. I was born ready.
Well, cool. All right. Well, the first question is one that I ask a lot of folks. And as an author, let's just have fun with this. So you have the ability to invite one other author, living or dead, to lunch. Who would that be and why?
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Ooh, a little Sherlock Holmes action, huh?
I love Sherlock Holmes. And I guess it's maybe a sick thing for me to say that he would be my pick, because I you know, he, even in his life, he was so actively irritated that people loved Sherlock Holmes as much as they do. And I don't know if I'm like, I don't know if it's some sick desire to like, just like drive that home or whatever, or just like, I just want him to know, like, even if like he thought, and that's what's brilliant to me, even though he thought that this was just like some nonsense that he churned out to make money, it reached so many people and it touched so many people. And I'm such a big Sherlock Holmes fan. I don't know if that would make him roll over in his grave or if he would end up saying, you know what, it was worthwhile. All of that, you know, stuff that I just wished people would forget, it was worth it.
So then this next question is more of a you question than a them question. If you had a chance to travel anywhere in the world, where would you want to go? And if this could be an undiscovered spot, this doesn't have to be like, I want to go see Paris or whatever, anywhere, any place, money is not an object.
Honestly, I really need to go to Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay.
I'm just so heavy into witchcraft, and I've heard so many great things it's not a creative answer, and it's not even a hard thing for me to do. I just need to make it happen. That's my number one destination. Plus, I just love the vibes, you know, and I love, like I said, like the cold, the wit, or that was before the show started, but we were talking about fall, right? And I absolutely love like the crisp New England vibes, the air, and like, just my God, the witchcraft. I love it.
Lots of fun with that one. So as an author, look, I realize that you're putting this stuff together, so this question might not be exactly on point, but what's the best money you've spent as an aspiring author?
Ooh. Money spent in pursuit of the craft?
That's correct.
I would say my registration to the Pittsburgh Writers Workshop 2024 and the extra couple dollars I threw down to meet with a couple agents at the convention. So you can meet with an unlimited amount of agents at the convention, but you pay for a 10-minute slot to pitch your novel. And I had never... it was like very shortly after I finished the Insuppressible Electra Ray. I had never come close to even doing anything like a query letter or a pitch or anything. And it really, registering for the conference got me started like really taking it seriously, because I purchased these slots and I thought, my goodness, I have to be prepared for this. So I really workshopped my query letter hard and I recited it out loud to a bunch of different friends of mine. God bless them for listening to it so many times. And I really came out of that conference feeling like I was ready to query.
Cool, cool, cool. That's a good question. And you know what? No one that's been on the show in the last 2 years has answered a question like this. I'm glad that's, it has each sort of little unique thing. And I always try to squeeze that one in because I think it's important, because a lot of our listeners are also writers. So last question before I let you go, There's a library and it's on fire and you run in to help, but you can only save one book and it can't be one of yours. Which book would you grab and why?
The Great Gatsby.
Oh, a little F. Scott Fitzgerald, huh?
I feel like I'm setting myself up as some kind of like classics guru by saying Arthur Conan Doyle and F. Scott Fitzgerald. And I'm honestly really not. I connect a lot more with modern fiction than I do old stuff. But The Great Gatsby was a reading project assigned in college, I think. And it was the time and the place. And it just hit me so hard. And I really identified with Nick Carraway as the narrator and Jay Gatsby. I felt like they both kind of called to completely opposite sides of my personality. And I've reread that book so many times. And every time I come back to it, there's always something that it'll be a bit that never hit me before. And then I kind of find a new connection with it and a new meaning to it. I really love that book. And I honestly loved the Baz Luhrmann adaptation, the film as well.
Yeah, that was a very artsy kind of, like, I wasn't sure how that was going to go, but I, in all honesty, I enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was, you know, when you go into a movie and your expectations are minimal and something blows you away, I think you appreciate it more. And it definitely did for me too. I agree with that 100%. So
yeah.
Laura, before I let you off the clock, tell everybody where they can find you and how they can follow you on social media.
Oh, absolutely. So the insuppressibleelectraray.wordpress.com, the title's all one word, and then it's the WordPress site. And I do have an Instagram and a Tumblr. The Instagram is just a personal account. Like I said, there's nothing that's really promoting me or my work at all. It's just me kind of showing what I love, what my life's like, what I get excited about. I am a photographer as well. So Instagram is pretty big for me just to share things that make me happy. And I've got a Tumblr where I do post bits of writing and just kind of like engaging in that wonderful Tumblr community for writers.
Well, thanks again for coming on, and to our followers this evening, thanks again for lending us your ear. And until next time, I'm JV Hillier. And may your gods go with you. Laura, thank you very much for being on the show. Looking forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely. Thank you. It was great.